ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the website, I believe, is currently up, so you can listen live on the streams there and to all of the fine programs that we have available, including the show that comes on right after mine, Christy on Soul Journeys Radio. Now, my very special guest today is Paul Webster, I believe, coming at us live from the Astro Lounge. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir. How are you?
I'm somewhat fabulous, I think, is my standard response. Now, would you do me the honour and explain to me just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Well, ordinary, I suppose you'd say I'm an ordinary kind of guy, northwest of England. Like my football, like my beer, all that kind of stuff. I've always been interested in things about conspiracies, shall we say. You know, it's very easy to call people conspiracy nutters and things like that, and I've always dabbled about in stuff like that, but about 10 years ago, I started to look at things a little bit more serious, and then particularly in the last 5 years, as courts and solicitors and people like that decided to get involved in my life without any real reason to do so, I hit the books, I hit the research, and the things that we started to find out, I met like-minded people, and the things we started to find out were just, they were absolutely mind-boggling.
What, such as?
The things like, basically 98% of all laws are consensual. You know, when you start talking to people about things that, you know, when you talk to people about paying income tax and we have things over here like council tax, there's no laws that say that these have to be written, these can be enforced on you. So, you know, through research and people trying, I mean, I'm some of the stuff that I've been involved in at the moment, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. It's not, you know, this isn't my baby, this has been handed to me, and, you know, all the more power to the people who've helped me with this. And just by talking to people like yourself and getting some of this information out there to people who either aren't sure about it, because there's nobody further ahead at the moment. You know, nobody's ahead of each other because people are coming at it from all different kinds of angles, and particularly in court settings, people are trying things that don't work, but out of the things that did work, you pick the bones out of it, and then you put something else in, and, you know, hey, presto, things start to change.
It's like making a magic potion of freedom.
That's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's people who've got to... I understand the fear factor. I mean, believe me, I was taken to court 2 years ago. I'm still in court over it, so I won't go into the specifics of it. But it's to do with a property that my mum and dad bought in 1984. My father was killed in 88, which, from compensation from that, paid for the house. My mum passed away.
Phone went off.
My mum passed away in 2003. The girl always, you know, when we do these stupid things that, you know, you're in love and you think you're indestructible and you can make all these things happen. Well, I got this house and I wanted to make a fresh start for us, and I lovingly put her on my mortgage and stuff like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, the relationship wasn't working. And to be fair, Vinny, you know, as we all do, you start to learn from your mistakes. Unfortunately, she decided that she wanted half of that house rather than take the payment, which was a third payment. I couldn't have afforded to give her any more, but no, she wanted more. But at that point, I couldn't afford a solicitor. I don't have savings. I live hand to mouth. So I had to hit the books myself and found like-minded people. And then from doing that, I'm realising that a civil court has absolutely no authority over any man or woman without the consent. And, you know, you started off bit by bit. You start trying to say, well, the judge will spend 15, 20 minutes trying to find out, is Mr. Paul Webster here? Well, no, because if I put my birth certificate onto the desk, you're not going to talk to that piece of paper. It's no eyes, no ears, no arms, no legs. So you must talk to Paul. And the way the court, the law society has written the language, you're trying to use English words, but you've got to try and buffer against the fact that these words don't mean what you're meaning to this person who sat in front of you. So it was very slow to start off with.
So if I call, let's say, a corrupt... let's say if I call a judge a corrupt scumbag, in legalese, does that phrase mean something different?
No, that's pretty damn right accurate, actually. I cannot tell you, Vinny, that I'm in a position with my occupation where I work with gang members and criminals and things like that.
So do you work for the courts as well, then?
Well, this is it. I would rather work with these guys. I would rather work with these guys who are straight up, straight down. You know where you stand with them. You know, these people. And I can't say that everybody in the legal system, because I have met some very nice people. I've even met a nice solicitor, believe it or not. I had an hour's conversation with this guy. And he says to me... I said, well, the judge didn't have jurisdiction, because a little bit what happened with me was I said, I do not give you consent. In this setting, this is mediation. You are not acting in the role as judge. You are acting as a mediator. So if this party and that party consent to your civil procedure rules, your rules, then you have authority. It's almost, it goes back to the time where if you bring admiralty law into it, because all these are derivatives, it's not one such thing anymore. You don't have commercial law, admiralty law, and all these separate. Civil and common law almost straddle the fence with these people at times. They try and bring all of it in. So if two captains came into the dock, they would, if they had a cargo dispute, they would go to the pub. And they'd go to the fella who runs the docks, who sat at the bar. And they would each put £10 or whatever it was in front of him, say, can you settle this dispute for us? Because he understands maritime law. And whatever he said went. So that is a consensual thing. Mm. The dockkeeper has no authority to all of a sudden say, well, I'm going to give that cargo to him if the fella doesn't consent. That's all it is. It's straight up and down, Vinny, black and white. There's no grey area with it whatsoever.
But so do all of the judges and lawyers and everything know that they're participating in fraud by telling people that they must come here or that they know that they're manipulating and deceiving people deliberately? Or are they just as deceived and manipulated themselves to believe that what they're doing is actually lawful?
Right, well, I would have to say I can neither confirm nor deny that allegation.
Which is a confirmation of sorts.
What I would say is I met a solicitor who had sworn an oath to the civil rules and procedures. He's bound by the civil procedure rules. And he told me that the judge has jurisdiction under the Trustees of Land Act. And I went, well, that's an act. That's a statute. I said, so therefore, if I don't agree with that, how can he enforce that? And he went, I don't understand what you mean. I went, well, let me put it this way, because I've had some great mentors who've been able to dumb this stuff down to my level, to layman's terms, so I can understand it, and then I can dispense that information. I said to him, I said, if there's a sign on the wall that says, no spitting, £1,000 fine. Next to that sign is a police officer. He went, right. I said, okay, I spit on the floor. How's he going to fine me £1,000? He went, I said, will you arrest me? He went, no, it's not an arrestable offence. I said, okay, how's he going to find me? The only way he can find me is that I consent to the fine, that I give him my name and my address. I give him 2 points of security information, which causes a verbal contract with a policy officer, and then I take the paperwork, and he makes it out to Mr. So all of a sudden, I decided that that commercial law affects me, and I'm going to stand under it. That's it. Simple as.
Well, of course, you when you say you stand under it, that's why whenever police officers arrest people for drunk driving or anything that's basically a law under an act of something like that, before they arrest you, right before they slap you in the handcuffs, they say, I'm going to arrest you for breaking such and such a law. Do you understand? And you go, yes, I understand. I stand under that law. Please arrest me. If you don't say I understand, then he can't even do it.
No, exactly. I mean, we've seen this in action, and it works so many times. A good friend of mine was sat at the traffic lights, minding his own business, and the phone goes, and it was me that had actually rang him. And he sat at the traffic lights, and he picks the phone up, hits hands-free, and puts it in his drinks holder. So he's on speakerphone, he sets off from the traffic lights, blue lights come on, pulls him over. Comes over to the window and says, was that an important call? And he said, I'm hands-free, mate. I've not done anything wrong. And he went, what's your name? And because of me always going on and on about this stuff, he went, well, what crime do you suspect me of committing? He says, you was on your mobile phone. He went, well, no, that's your opinion. He said, my phone's quite clearly in the drinks holder. I haven't broken the law or anything. He went, it's under the mobile phone act. And he says, well, I says, that's not a crime. He says, look, mate, what's your name? And he tried for 10, 15 minutes. He says, I'm not obliged to give you my details unless you can tell me what crime you suspect me of. After 15, 20 minutes, he said, I'll let you off with a verbal, because he did not contract with him. He could not find him. Who's he going to find? I had this with the...
It would be quite amusing, actually. The police officer writes out a fine, and under name he says some dude in the truck.
Exactly. It doesn't work. This stuff is. A very good friend of mine told me that if this stuff is complicated, it's not right. It's simple. You keep it as simple as possible, because the first time I went to court with it, I must have done well. About 17 pages of everything that was not right with this case and this, that, and the other. And I quickly learned that what I've done was just giving the case away. Because they could just go, no, no good, no good, no good, no good, he's got nothing here. And they'll just laugh at you. Or if you get them on something and you still put too much information, they'll talk about the absolute bollocks that doesn't mean anything. And we'll just keep talking about the same stuff. All it is gamesmanship with these people. And going back to, are these judges all corrupt? Are all these solicitors corrupt? I have to say, there must be a fair percentage that do know. There must be. Like I said, this one guy, this one solicitor who I've met, he went, you've coached me. He says, you should go and get a degree. I went, but then I'll be in your system that's crumbling around you. Oh, it'll never happen. I went, mate, it's crumbling. The dam is breaking. People are seeing this system for what it is. If I'd have gone to court, Vinny, I mean, at the end of the day, this stuff is still ongoing, but if I'm sat in front of a judge, that judge can't even take my pen off me and give it to somebody else without my consent. And the fact is that judges are used to me turning up with a solicitor. When I've done that, that solicitor who stood in front of him is bound by the civil procedure rules that the judge has authority over straight away. I'm deemed a child because I brought my guardian. So there's two solicitors in the room. The judge has authority. But once you turn up without that solicitor, if that judge is lawful and not working as a private business offering a service, if he's being lawful, especially when international law, such as the European Convention of Human Rights, is put in front of him, and he turns the paper over and doesn't look at it, then all of a sudden you've got to think, what's going on here? You should be saying, there's no case to answer here. Mr. Webster's quite right. Off you go. It's still a private matter. It's still a private dispute. If me and you had a dispute, you couldn't go to Max Egan and say, Max, can you sort this dispute out between me and Paul?
Mm.
Unless I say, yes, Max, please sort it out. If I say, no, I'm not having that, Max can't suddenly take something from me and give it to you. He has no authority. And the judge in that setting has no authority. There's no crime committed. There's no victim. So, you know, when you start looking at this stuff, it's difficult taking it on, Vinny, I'll be honest with you, because the system is that dinosaur with it. They're just used to people turning up and being, you know, going, oh, yes, I agree, this, and this. And then you're thrown out. And before you know it, you've been handed your ass to you. You're stood outside the court going, what the hell's just happened there?
Yeah, exactly. They bust you for weed and you're supposed to pay, yes, sir, three bags full, sir, and then you're in jail. We'll be right back after the break with Mr. Webster here. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Jimi Hendrix once said there must be some kind of way out of here. He was probably talking about court. And my very special guest is Paul Webster, coming to us live from the Uber Kingdom, the place where all of this nice, wonderful, legal jargon system of scumbaggery that currently dominates the Commonwealth originally came from. And in fact, it's also the English model of the court system was indeed the model of the US court system, and so on and so forth. So if you are enslaved legally today, ladies and gentlemen, you only have one nation to thank.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you know, cheers for the contribution to humanity, bro.
We do what we can.
Oh, they certainly do. What England can do is quite extraordinary, including conquer the known world.
There you go. I mean, nothing's ever changed, Vinny. The sun has never ceased setting on the English.
On Britannia's holdings.
Definitely. And fortunately now, it's changed from one set of tyranny to just a global empire of corporations. When, you know, I still talk to people who are so asleep to this kind of stuff. You know, people who are voting, I vote for Labour. Why do you vote for Labour? Because my dad did. Well, I'm sorry, but that's just not good enough in this current climate. You know, it's not what you think it is. You need to be a bit more switched on than that. But you talk to them about X Factor or Big Brother or, you know, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. They can raffle everything off. They know who's in it. They know what's happening. And then, you know, I feel like I walk around. Oh no, I did feel like I used to walk around with this big cloud over my head where, oh no, Webby's coming again, let's get out of here, he's going to bring doom and gloom. And it's when you're trying to speak truth to people, it shatters paradigms and it's belief systems that are just, you know, people sort of tell me that, well, it's never changed in my granddad's lifetime, it's never changed in my dad's lifetime, and it hasn't changed in mine, so I don't think it will. I went, why don't you change it? Why don't you do something? And like I said to you before, I get the fear factor. I certainly didn't go looking for any of this. It all came to me, but at the end of the day, what do you do? Do you bend over and take it? Or do you actually say, well, hang on a minute, I don't think you can quite do this. Mine started quite simple enough with, like I said, the house thing started, but the bank had... In their infinite wisdom, when I remortgaged, they decided that even though I set the direct debit up in March, they couldn't clear it at their end in the paperwork before May. So they missed April. My partner at the time dealt with the money. And what she didn't do was check whether anything had gone out. So what they did was, because they'd made that mistake, they took two lots out of 1 month's wage. So they took two mortgage payments out of 1 month's wage, which, you know, as you can imagine, it wiped my account out. No bills had gone. So they had to give me a $2,500 overdraft. So for the best part of two, 3 years, I was paying £30 a month interest on that. But when my wages went in, I was £1,100 overdrawn. When I didn't need the mortgage because she'd turned the offer down, I got a letter from the bank stating they're reducing the overdraft to £920. And I went, well, I'm £1,100 overdrawn. I went, what can I do about this? And without laughing, Vinny, this lovely lady said to me, you'll have to get a loan. I went, hang on, you want me to get a loan to pay you money back that I haven't had? Well, you haven't it. It's called unplanned borrowing. I went, no, it's called you taking too much money out of my account. Ah, well, you should have made sure that money was in there. So basically what they were doing was putting it back on my toes at every point. So I started looking up for stuff. There's a great website I got put onto. I've met the guy who runs it. He's a great, honest lad. He's got a lot of great ideas. But at the same time, he's always open to new ideas and new ways of learning. And this website is called getoutofdebtfree.org. Helps millions of people now. And it started off just as this little website that they were trying to help people. And I basically read up on how this overdraft thing works. Basically, as we both know, they just tap the money in. So I wrote 3 letters to the bank and I went, I want to close the account. I moved all my direct debits to another bank. I said, I want to close that now. I'm willing to pay you whatever I owe you lawfully. Please send me a signed contract, a bill of exchange, and the actual accounting. What account did you take £2,500 out of and put into mine? Where's the paper trail? Show me that, and I will pay you whatever I owe you lawfully. It went from the collections department to a solicitor's who not only... Now, this was the first time that I got a little bit of confidence because I thought, you know, as it is, it was like squeaky bum time, shall we say. Goes to a solicitor's and you get a letter from a solicitor and all of a sudden it's, oh, now then, come on, let me read this properly. And they said, not only were they going to take me to court, but they would take the money out of my wage before I got paid. They have no authority to do that. There's nothing whatsoever. So bang, there's the same 3 letters to the solicitors. It goes from the solicitors back to the debt collection. Back from the debt collections, it gets kicked up to the top bank. So it's actually the Australia bank that owns it, but it went to the sister company. After 6 weeks, they wrote to me, and they were very nice, and they said, we don't like not doing our best for our customers. We want happy customers, so we're going to investigate this. We'll let you know our findings in 4 weeks. 4 weeks later, I got a letter. It's taking a little bit longer, maybe another couple of weeks. So after 6 weeks, they wrote to me and said, we've investigated this thoroughly. In our opinion, you should pay this. I said, oh, right. Well, if it's in your opinion, then I won't bother them. I said, you can't give me any legal terms why I owe this money, why there is this debt, which I know there is no debt because the bank have never had a liability on it. They haven't lost anything. They've given me nothing. All they've done is allow me that buffer. So it's almost a service that they're charging you for rather than anything else. That was, 2-3 years ago. And, you know, you get the odd bit of phishing where these debt collection companies will say, you must reply to this, you must reply to that. And once that fear starts to go away from you, you start dealing with these people and you realise what kind of people you're dealing with. And a lot of the time, Vinny, it's only somebody who could be your next door neighbour who's trying to pay their bills. They don't understand the legal jargon. They're just given a script. This is what you must say, this is what you must do. once I started to learn all this stuff, I had utility companies ringing me up and they'd say, can I speak to Mr. Paul Webster? And I'll say, right, well, can I stop you there? Mr. Paul Webster's a legal title only. I'm the representative of that legal title. My name's Paul. How can I help you? And after about an uneasy 5 second silence, the guy would say, is there a better number I can contact Mr. Paul Webster on? And I'll say, no, you're not listening to this. You're not getting it. It's a legal title only. I'm the representative. My name is Paul. Ah, now I understand what you're saying. I can't talk to you because it's a data protection. I must speak to Mr. Paul Webster. I went, well, there you go. And I said, let's be honest, mate. You're recording this phone call for training purposes, admissible in court. You were trained to try and trip me up to be Mr. Paul Webster, which it's impossible. Would your utility company really want me to commit fraud by stating I'm something I'm not? So, you know, they don't even bother ringing me anymore. It's just, it's about trying to get a bit of confidence and just deal with these people.
Well, it's recognising them for what they are. If you've got a tiger, if you've got a tiger in front of you and you throw a spear at it and the spear goes right through and you realise that tiger's just made out of paper, you're no longer afraid of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And they rely so much on that fear factor. They rely so much on bullying tactics, especially when it gets down to the likes of bailiffs. I mean, we're having so much success with bailiffs over here at the minute. A mate of mine from the Liverpool group, at one point he was stopping 5-6 repossessions a week. There's a great one of him on YouTube. If you put in YouTube conviction versus eviction, superb. You just see how to deal with these people. And fortunately on that day, the police that turned up knew the jobs. They knew their jobs. They weren't there to enforce anything. And I've seen this with me, my own eyes, because as I was saying to you before, one of our main things is these bills of exchange. The bill of exchange is, it's phenomenal. Every bill that you get is a bill of exchange, and that bill of exchange is treated as cash once you've endorsed it and transferred it back to the company. It's how commerce works. It's how the banks work. They don't use cash. They use pieces of paper that just have writing on it. That's all it is, but it's treated as cash. So after this certain utility company ballsed up three payment plans, like the first one was I was paying £60 a month for my gas, and they reduced my direct debit to £5 a month without even bothering to tell me. So I thought, oh, well, I must have overpaid so much last winter that they don't want me to pay it through summer because I'll be, you know, using the gas less, so they've lowered it. Didn't think anything of it. Then they hit me with a £354 gas bill. So two more payment plans later, they ring me up and say, you've not paid your bill. I said, I'm looking at the two receipts that I've got on from the payment plan. And I went, you know what, I've had enough. I said, send me a paper bill. So they sent me the paper bill out, and we were trying all these different kinds of things, trying to nail this bill of exchange. We were using a term called accepted for value, which I even had a firm confirm that, oh, we used to accept that payment, but we don't anymore. So these things were like loopholes that the companies could get around. We couldn't quite actually nail them. So they applied for a warrant, and it was a warrant of entry to my property to put a pay-as-you-go meter in. Well, they applied for that right under the Gas and Electric Board Act of 1954. Well, in that act, there is nothing about a warrant of entry for a monetary dispute.
Is that what you call unwarranted influence?
Yeah. It's a health and safety issue, basically. So, because what they're basically saying is, they're going to the magistrates, I've not turned up to dispute anything, so they say, we want to, basically what they will be saying is, we want to check the supply. So they turned up at my house. They told me that they were coming, and I got there just as they were arriving. I had somebody in the house to stop them. And as I comes walking up, there's a policeman there. And bear in mind, when I turned up, there's a warrants officer, a locksmith, a gas man, and six police officers. Six police officers for a gas bill. So I
talk about the intimidation factor. I mean, they were just hoping they wouldn't need anybody. You know, oh man, if we just show up with enough force, this little slave will just roll over, belly up, we'll just be able to go in and do what we want. And
that's normally what the mentality is. So this police officer comes sauntering over with his hands in his flak jacket, and he goes,
"Oh yeah, they all do that." In fact, we've got a lot of English police officers here in New Zealand. In fact, I just sent a video of me talking to one of these guys, and that's exactly how they do it. Why is that? I like to rub my nipples while I frack you with my big baton stick and my tasty stingy thing.
The old Germans are they. So he comes sauntering over and has his flak jacket, and he says, "You're going to have to let him in, mate. He's got a warrant." I just turned to him and said, "Are you here as peacekeeper or acting as bailiff today?" And he went, "Oh, mate, we're only here to keep the peace." And I said, "Well, your opinion's not warranted then, mate." So I turned to the warrant officer and I said, "This bill's paid." And he said, "No, it's not, blah, 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 blah." I said, "Look, mate," I said, "I'm standing in a common law here. I said, this bill has been paid. If you say this bill hasn't been paid, you take me to court and we'll substantiate the bill in court, because you are acting as judge in your own case here by stating I owe this money and it's unsubstantiated. I'm standing under common law. Should you try and gain entry to my property, I will remove you by force if necessary." That was it. Never even bothered to try and gain entry. And the police just doesn't go out. He eventually left. I rang the company up. They cancelled the warrant. Job done. So we worked on this bill of exchange. It comes round to it again. We're going to court. I went, "Right, I'm coming to court now. I'm coming to see you." So I gets to court. I didn't tell the company I was coming. Well, I put my bundle together, my mate who'd already had a successful court attendance with his utility company back in January. I get the bundle, I go, "Right, okay, this needs changing for me, that. So we put this bundle in, that turns up at court. And Mr. Alley comes walking up and says, "I'm the court agent for British Gas, and the other utility companies here I deal with, you know, E.ON, all the top companies." And...
Hold on, let's leave this to after the break, because I think that's a nice cliffhanger. Leave it on. We'll be right back, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, with Paul Webster. Please don't desert me.
Out the door, just in time. Head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Paul Webster. Now, Paul, we got cut off just before. You were talking about some dude who was like in an authoritative position come up trying to tell you something. What?
Well, he thinks he was in an authoritative position. He comes walking up to me and introduces himself to me. And says, I'm the court agent. I knew you'd be coming, which I said, "Really?" I said, because I never told anybody I was coming. You just expected me, did you? And he says, "What is it you hope to achieve by coming today?" I went, "Well, I'm going to stop you getting a warrant to break into my house." He went, "Mr. Webster, I have 200 of these warrants signed off every week." I went, "Really?" I said, "Okay." He says, "Look, you can still come in. You can come in." He says, "But they're not going to hear you today. So it's up to you whether you want to come in or not." So, he said that, and then we went in, and he stands up and gives his spiel. "Mr. Webster's got a £454 gas bill. It's still outstanding. We've written to him numerous occasions, and now we would like to put a pay-as-you-go meter in so Mr. Webster can still keep his gas, but then we can get the money back." He said, "Right, okay, Mr. Webster, I went, you've got me a court bundle there. I said, if you just look through, and I go through mine, I says, if you just go to these documents, and the legal advisor holds these legal documents up. And I went, what you've got in your hand there is a bill of exchange. That is treated as cash. I said, that is how I paid my gas bill. So therefore, there is no monetary dispute. I said, number two, this is a magistrate's court. This isn't the right jurisdiction for a monetary dispute. He is stating that he's being judged in his own case by stating a piece of paper that you would send to me saying, this is what you owe. You're not substantiating that. Whereas I'm countering it and saying, I paid it with that. And the legal advisor said, are you legally trained? He says, no. And he said, okay. And I said, plus, under the Gas and Electric Board Act, they can only get a warrant of entry under a health and safety issue. And he stands up and he says, this is not a health and safety issue. We know the supply is true and it's broad because we've read the meter. I went, thank you. If it's a monetary dispute, then we're in the wrong jurisdiction. And the legal advisor says, no, we can have jurisdiction over this. I said, well, this is an unsubstantiated bill and I'm stating that I've paid it, so therefore I want this warrant stopped. And he said, he has a look through it and he says, it's a bit complex this, Mr. Webster. He said, I'm not going to be able to assess this within 10 minutes. He says, I'm going to have to adjourn it and put it before a district judge. And I said, right, okay then. So he adjourns it. So the court agent only had 199 stamped that week. Goes away, comes the 2nd of August, that's 2 weeks later, we go back. This time, the court agent isn't there. They send something like, he looked like a fella in his 50s, in a gas boiler suit, looked like he's just fitted a boiler, and then he's on his way home, and he's turned up at court with an envelope, and he's sat there, playing on his iPhone, and the court clerk goes over, says something to him, hands him an envelope. Comes over to me with the envelope and I looked at it and it's a copy of the last letter I got from them and they're talking to me about promissory notes. I'm going, why are they talking to me about promissory notes? I haven't written a promissory note. I've not promised to pay you. I've paid you. So there again, absolutely nothing goes into the court. The judge says, he stands up, the gas man stands up and he gives the same spiel. And the judge just looked at him, puts his glasses on the end of his nose and says, are you legally trained? And he went, no. And he says, have you read these documents? No. And you're not legally trained? No. Have British Gas legal team looked at these documents? I don't know. To which I said, look, the legal advisor took my documents and said to me at the last hearing, can I photocopy these, Mr. Webster, and give them to the court agents to hand to the British Gas legal team? I went, of course, by all means. The judge just went, I've no choice but to adjourn this for 56 days, 28 days for British Gas's legal team to respond to Mr. Webster's document, and then 28 days for Mr. Webster to respond back for those documents. Right, okay. 28 days go. So I rings the court. I went, a British Gas in court today? No, there's no hearings today. I said, can you check whether I'm in court today with British Gas? Give me details. No, your next court date is the 4th of October. I went, right. I said, so you're promising me there's no British Gas there because I don't want anything slipping under here. I said, no, got a name, got a slip to say that that it's the 4th of October off and signed. So turns up on the 4th of October. Sat outside the courtroom, delayed for about 15, 20 minutes. Court clerk comes to me and says, Mr. Webster, have you received any documents from British Gas? I went, no. I said, no, I'll tell a lie. Here's a letter saying that they're going to apply for a warrant. The warrant that they should be disputing now, they're telling me that they're going to apply for another. Right, well, we haven't received any documents either. So she goes back in, she calls me in. Mr. Webster, I'm not going to keep you any longer. I'm throwing the warrant out. We've received no documentation. You've received none. And British Gas haven't turned up. And the reason they didn't turn up, Vinny, was because when I said to the judge, I went, well, thank you for that. I said, but can I have an order that the bill has been paid? He said, there'll be no orders made today because there's nobody here to contest it. That is why they didn't turn up, because that would have been a test case, because they can't answer this bill of exchange because it's a perfectly legal payment. The bill of exchange was brought in so that you did the pieces of paper you used for barter every day, you kept hold of them for what you'd worked for, so that you could put food on your table and clothes on your back. That's what it was brought in for, because as a natural resource, I am entitled to that for being born in this country. So when we read the Bill of Exchange Act, and then we read the Consumer Credit Act of 1974, Section 123 of the Consumer Credit Act states that your utilities to your domestic property are free. So the infrastructure of all the utilities are paid for by the companies that come over to your country, set up business, and charge corporate rates. So straight away, I'm thinking, well, why are these old people sat in front of little Vector heaters with quilts wrapped around them, too scared to put the heating on? Women, old fellas and women are dying every year. And then they go and put the gas up by 9%, which is going to make people struggle again this winter. And they're expecting a pretty bad winter over here this year. And I'm going, I don't get it. Why aren't people talking about this? This is straightforward stuff. I mean, I get it. One of my mates went away. He said, I read that bill of exchange. I says, yeah. He went, I haven't got a clue what it says. So it might as well have been in Southern Matabelian, because I haven't got a clue what it means or what it says or anything. And I said, it's what it doesn't say is what you need to know. And he went, what? I said, it's what it doesn't say. I said, you've got to read between the lines. Well, like I said, Vinny, I've been lucky that somebody who understands it word for word can dumb it down to a concept that I get. So the fact of the matter is, your gas is free, your electric's free, and your water's free to a domestic property. End of. But the companies who you're dealing with, especially the people you deal with on the phone, they're not legally trained for a purpose. And so they don't get themselves in trouble and they don't get the company in trouble. It's as simple as that. And it's the same when it came down to the courts over the house and things. I rang the Law Society. I rang the Law Society and I started to tell them about what these judges have done, because basically it's my property's been stolen, Vinny, but we've not been able to sell it just yet. I've got some things in the pipeline, but it's gone for 2 years now. And I'm saying to the Law Society, I said, look, they have no authority. Where would they get the authority from? I want to know, where would they get the authority from in that setting? Sorry, I can't offer legal advice. I went, I'm not asking for legal advice. I'm asking for you, the Law Society, to tell me where a judge gets his authority from in a civil court. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not legally trained. I went, I'm sorry. I said, I'm not legally trained. I said, I'm speaking to the Law Society and I'm speaking to somebody who's not legally trained. And how the hell are you going to be able to help me? Well, I could put you in touch with the Office of Judicial Complaints. So I've got rights to the Office of Judicial Complaints. And the letters I got back from them were just, they were even more baffling than it was. We can't investigate a judge's decision because it's based on evidence given on the day. And I said, what evidence? What authority? Where does he get the authority from? And they will not talk about the authority. It's all about evidence.
Yeah.
Just covering their ass.
I think that's actually a poignant bit to leave it on. Unfortunately, we've run out of time today, Paul, and I thank you for coming on. And we had a conversation over the break, I recall. You were kind of wondering, how did it all get to this? How did it come to this? And I said,
yeah.
Well, we had public education, first of all, to indoctrinate everybody into believing everything every authority figure tells you. And we have mass media to reinforce that. As a result, everybody trusted the authorities from day one. never question them, presto, you have an entire society full of people who do not ask questions, who do follow orders, even though they're completely insane.
Thank God.
All right, Paul, thank you very much. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We'll be coming back shortly with hour number two, I believe. Penny Bright is going to be trying to raise a bit of money so she can travel to Australia to go to an anti-corruption conference and start mixing and mingling and exposing a bit of scumbaggery there. Thanks, Paul.
No problem. Thank you, sir.
All right, back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.